Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of Is the Universe, Including Man, Evolved by Atomic Force? And we are recording today at the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we're very glad you could join us this morning. Good morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 106 of Collectania, a few excerpts from there. Good is infinite. If we limit good and concede power to evil, how can we expect to escape that which we believe has power to hold us in bondage? The first commandment forbids us to believe in a power apart from God. There is no error of any name or nature in my consciousness that can resist, hide, or escape the truth. The light of truth and life and love shines straight through my belief of evil and banishes it, chasing it into its native nothingness. My desire is to know and obey God's law, to be filled with all the fullness of spirit, knowing only the consciousness of God good. My health, strength, life, intelligence, action, etc., are subject to the governing and controlling power of the divine mind and to nothing else, for there is no other power. Mary Baker Eddy.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much, Florence. All right, the watching point, Karen.
Watch number 464. Watch that you perceive the lesson sickness is intended to teach, namely that matter and a material sense of man are wholly undesirable and hence only worthy to be disposed of in order that the man of God may be revealed. The temptation under sickness is to be so disturbed that one cannot think clearly or work constructively. A Christian Scientist is one who has put his hand to the plow in order to break up material belief. He is not loyal to God, however, if he permits himself to look back at the harmony he once had in a human sense and to long for it. I'm assuming you do not want me to read the whole references that's in the Bible, in the lesson this week, but there are a few lines that are not in our lesson.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Okay, these lines are in Science and Health. Mortal error will vanish in a moral chemicalization. This mental fermentation has begun and will continue until all errors of belief yield to understanding. Belief is changeable, but spiritual understanding is changeless.
Thank you very much. Yes, and all of you should have studied that page 96 all week in our lesson. So yeah. This lesson is so perfect for all that was going on this week. It couldn't have been more perfecter. So many good things to think about and work with as the truth. As to really what's going on. So, comments on the watching point.
Well, what came to me this morning was what Mrs. Eddy says in Rudimental Divine Science, page 11, where she says, sickness is the schoolmaster leading you to Christ, first to faith in Christ, next to belief in God as omnipotent, and finally, to the understanding of God and man in Christian Science, whereby you learn that God is good, and in science, man is his likeness, the forever reflection of goodness. Therefore, good is one and all.
Very good. Thank you.
It is hard sometimes when we hurt, when our body or something is very disturbing. It is hard to think that it isn't real, but we are learning in Christian Science that we have to start with the fact that it isn't real, and then from there go to go to our understanding. Whatever it is at the moment, whatever we know of God is enough, I'm learning, to overcome, you know, the lie that's presenting itself.
Thank you, because God never does anything that we can't meet or master. It would not. Of course, God never gives us anything, but it's a perfect science in life, exactly what we need in order to progress and grow. And if you take it that way, you will. And as Carpenter said, and as I've mentioned many times, that sickness is just the red flag. You didn't catch it when your thinking was negative or fearful or unloving or whatever it was. You didn't catch it there. So now it's screaming at you, stop it. And you've got to and change thought.
I feel that our relationship with God is paramount. We have to hold on to what does God want us to do and not how we interpret it as human beings.
Thank you.
Yeah, God is love.
Is why it's important to declare to yourself the scientific statement of being. That's really the starting point. The allness of God, the allness of good, and the nothingness of anything that's unlike that.
It's always referring to the goodness of God, the love of God. He wouldn't give us anything, you know, to make us suffer or anything like that. So as Gary is saying, to the allness of God, because God is all, because good is all, this I must know, or I must awaken to, as not real. It's not part of what God is given today or any day.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the fact is, God is incapable of giving us anything that's not good.
Therefore, you can't have it, because He's the only power. You're just in a dreamland. You're in the Adam dream, and you're experiencing what you're dreaming. It's not the truth, never was the truth. But if you've been indulging in this kind of thinking for a long time, some of us for most of our lives, it takes a little while to undo and get our thoughts into captivity to the Christ. So it would seem. It doesn't always, it doesn't have to, but sometimes it does, and if it does, we shouldn't complain, but just keep on trekking.
Yeah. And if the process of waking up is difficult, well, and it is. Mm-hmm. You know, waking up can often be a very difficult, and sometimes we prevent ourselves from waking up. You know, we willfully hang on to something that we shouldn't be hanging on to.
Well, and what does that mean that you look back at harmony he once had in the human sense and long for it?
I think that's what struck me the most with this, is that it's a little bit of a litmus test. Am I being honest too? Am I using God to go back to something? Am I trying to get back to just this, you know, comfort? Or is my goal truly to understand God? And, you know, those are two really opposite directions.
Very good. Yes. And also there is no real harmony or comfort humanly. There really isn't. I mean, maybe in a drugged sense, but not in a real sense. I mean, I never found it. I don't think that's true or so.
Because you keep working to try to get it perfect.
Carol?
It's never a real harmony.
No, it's peace when there isn't sort of sleep to what's going on. So you think everything's harmonious. While in science, it brings the error out from undercover, which is always a good thing. So, all right.
Looking back reminds me of, it's the good old days. No, these are the good old days, not way back then.
Okay, yeah. Good point, yeah. Good old days people talk about.
Yeah, true.
So not really. And even when we think things were better, They really weren't.
Right.
That's no. There's always been progress. There will continue to be as long as there are Christian scientists working on this earth. Progress is God's law.
I'm facing that line. Progress is the law of God in science and humor.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. So we are making progress.
One All thing right. I want to add is, you know, a lot of people have on their phones these days pictures, photos that come up. And sometimes that happens on my phone. And sometimes I will, it reminds me just what you were saying, that I look at them, but I have to read. But what comes to me is, they'll remind me of some fun times and, you know, with my kids and things. But I say to myself, yeah, but you wouldn't want to go back there. Look at where you are now. What you understand now about God, would you really want to go back there? You are so much further ahead in your understanding. So although I enjoy looking at the pictures, it's starting to make me more grateful now about how I've progressed since then. And so, no, I don't want to go back there.
Good. No, that's exactly right. Yeah, you don't. Okay.
And now that you mentioned children, I think it's worthwhile to say what we have after the children are gone is such a wonderful opportunity to keep on doing the work of God and more time to do God's work, so, you know, we can debate that way about the empty nest and all these things going there so well.
Right. Many people find that it's a very good time. This emptiness syndrome does not have to be, unless you were just one of these people who just devoted all your time, energy to your children. And hopefully, as a Christian Scientist, that's not true.
I was going to say, and God always has a new project, a new work. Yeah. So, yeah.
Ever unfolding. Jeremy, and then we end this discussion.
Yeah, you don't want to teach your kids that life after kids is just nothing, because they have to go through their process too. And what are you giving them to look forward to?
Yeah, and too much on your child is not, our children is not healthy or normal. All right, Nancy, you can please read what you've sent to us.
Yes, Psalm 46, verse 4. There is a river, the stream whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. And I found a commentary. The Bible says, the imagery presented in this verse depicts a life-giving river that represents God's refreshing presence in the midst of turmoil. The city of God is portrayed as a place of joy and security, contrasting sharply with the surrounding chaos it faces. The water imagery evokes the spirit of divine sustenance and protection, reminiscent of how the waters of Siloam were associated with life and safety for the ancient Jerusalem. This verse highlights that despite overwhelming calamities symbolized by roaring waters and shaking mountains, the presence of God is a source of comfort and stability. In the context of this psalm, the promise of divine help is paramount. It assures believers that they can find joy and strength in God's promises, even amidst the fiercest adversities. Trusting in God fosters an inner peace that counters external disturbances and fears. The text encourages readers to draw upon God's infallible strength, reinforcing that His presence amidst His people is both a refuge and a source of enduring gladness. The verse reminds us that true joy comes from recognizing God's abiding support despite life's challenges. I thought this was really speaking to today.
Thank you. Very beautiful. Beautiful description of it. This again, staying in the Father's house. On one side, there will be science and peace, and on the other side, discord and dismay. And you choose which side you're going to be on by the thoughts you think and indulge in. And, you know, if you let everything upset you or get angry or whatever, you're entering the discord and dismay side. And that's the Adam dream side. So only the good, the true, and the real, that's what we focus on. And that is truly what is real. And the other, we're just observing the Adam dream in many instances anyway. So
only with thine eye shall thou see the destruction of the wicked.
Thank you.
90 verse Psalm.
Thank you very much.
And that's what it means to hold but steadfastly, right? To the enduring, the good, and the true.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all you have in your consciousness.
Where is the turmoil? It's in our consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Always.
If you're filled with the truth, there won't be.
Yes, undisturbed amid the
during testimony.
These are the material sense. And also Mrs. Eddy says, why stand aghast at nothingness? So yeah. We have to maintain our peace. And in the responsive reading, not in the responsive reading, but in the that beautiful Psalm 46, which tells us too, the heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved, he uttered his voice, and the earth melted. And then he maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. And then peace, or be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. So be still and know that I am God. That's the only peace there is in that knowing. And it's of utmost importance to do. And I'm telling you, if it's not one thing, it'll be something else. I've learned that a long time ago. There's not one thing that's going to get you upset. Then there'll be something else that will get you upset if you're so inclined to get upset. Mm-hmm. And you'll spend your life being upset. No fun.
You see the nothingness of all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Doing that, you will prove it. You will prove the nothingness. And that's mm-hmm. most important, that we prove it. We know it, we see it, and then we prove it. And it does become nothing. I don't know how many times we have watched over things and then there's nothing more about it. Right, Jeremy?
Absolutely. Every watch.
You know, it just fades into its native nothingness. And at the time, it just sounds so terrible and awful, but we do our work about it and then it's gone. Who was trying to speak?
Thank you. I realized this morning that when my thoughts are constantly going over unanswered questions, that I am in the mortal mind, that when I am reflecting and with God in divine mind, that every answer will be present. And that was a real wake-up call for me.
Thank you. Yeah, there's never a problem without the answer right there, always. Just have to be still and listen. Be still. And know that I am God.
And be patient, because you get the answer when you need it, not before, not after.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a discipline, and it's a wonderful discipline.
Okay, at the right time, he gives it. He never fails.
Yes. Yes, and that's according to your receptivity to receive it. So be still is most important. Jeremy, the golden text.
Psalms. The earth is the Lord, and the fullness thereof, the world, and they that dwell therein.
Thank you. That's such a powerful statement, and Carrie did send beautiful articles. They're always so beautiful. You know, Mrs. Evans, when she started healing thoughts, she went back to old journals and sentinels and revised them and put them in our magazine. And it, to me, it was like a resurrection day, because these articles, these beautiful articles from early workers, were being lost and buried in the reading rooms, were they not? Who read them? Nobody, for the most part. So she would condense them, take out the salient points, and resurrect them. Marvelous work. Now, Carol was her mentor, I guess. Carol spent hours and hours and hours learning how to do this, and she has carried it on. And now we have Carrie, who came out of the blue in a way, and she has to spend hours each week on this. And she calls out the salient points of these incredible articles, and we seem to have an endless supply of them. It's amazing. I thank God for it. And our early workers, who have such deep, wonderful thoughts. And now Tony is featuring them on his Mary Baker Eddy website. So they're coming back into view for healing and for absorption in your life, so you can take these truths now and make them yours. So I'm grateful for all of you who participate in this work. Louise does it as well. She finds the articles as well. So the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. We own nothing, folks. Nothing. Nothing. We don't own it. We're sojourners passing through, and we need to respect whatever God has given us to take care of and value it and take good care of it. But it's not ours. And in a wonderful article, which many of you know about, by Adam Dickey, called Possession.
Possession.
Now, is that recorded, Karen? Did you do that? Well,
yes, I did record it. I did record it. It is on the website.
Yes. Well, he makes that statement. It's a long article, but you should all be familiar with, and you can study it or listen to it. And an excerpt from it: the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Rightfully speaking, everything in this world belongs to God, and through reflection to man, who is the image and likeness of God. When therefore we have reached the point of our demonstration where we can resolve things into thoughts, the multiplication of these thoughts will be possible, so that every individual may reflect and possess all that belongs to his maker. Wonderful to think of that. Instead of carrying on and wanting what our neighbor has, you demonstrate for yourself all that God has given you. He is your source, and it's infinite, and he loves us all equally. No one is excluded. And he makes the point, I mean, knowing this would be the end of war. Because often wars are started because we think somebody has what we want, or vice versa. Have everything. And Jesus and the early prophets and workers proved it. And they needed something, it was right at hand. So we can do this as well. And we hear the testimonies every week about it, how people are demonstrating supply, abundance. So find the article Possession by Adam Dickey and work with it, especially if your need is supply. And Mrs. Eddy wrote a beautiful one, too, where, again, we possess it all only through our reflection, because God possesses it all. It's all his. And I think use it wisely and naturally share it with others. He gives us more. But if we are selfish and are mistreat what we're given, then we lose it. Are you taking care of what he's already given you? Remember in Mrs. Eddy's house, she said she wasn't patient with a speck of dust, right? So she perfectly, indeed. And so must we. We must make our abode, our lives, cars, whatever we have, we should keep as best we can.
Very important.
All right, then now we will go to Dardell.
Atomic Force, Every Man in His Place. This is by Myrtle T. Sutherland. This is about Gideon. The Bible tells that the young Gideon and his small band of followers were about to encounter a formidable army. This is a quote. The Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of East lay along the valley like grasshoppers for multitude, and their camels were without number, as the sand by the seaside for multitude. End quote. That's Judges. Gideon had a band of only 300 men left from an original number of 32,000. Those who were afraid were sent home, and from the remaining 10,000, God directed Gideon to test them and choose only those who were mentally trustworthy. At the crossing of a stream, he observed that some stooped down to the water to drink, but the 300 scooped up the water in their hands and drank, using their eyes to keep watch while doing so, keeping and praying, and they were alert. The remarkable accomplishment of this group is set forth by the remainder of the story. As they stood, every man in his place, round about the camp, and all the host ran and cried and fled. Further, we read, and Gideon came to Jordan and passed over, he and the 300 men that were with him, faint, yet pursuing them. Another end quote. The record closes with the account of the complete defeat of the enemy. Today, mankind finds it just as necessary to stand every man in his place in the battle with material sense. We must reject the materiality which would keep us always stooping down to drink the waters of mere comfort in the senses. We must keep on overcoming error, even when mortal sense would try to make us believe that we are faint. This rejection of material sense, this standing with overcoming, is possible only through reliance upon God, just as Gideon's triumph could only have occurred as a result of obedience to God.
I just read the last paragraph.
The very last. Okay, yeah,
though the place where we stand.
That's what I had. Though the place where we stand may appear insignificant, monotonous, or even dangerous, with the truths of Christian Science, we may begin at once to free ourselves from its false claims. Man's only real place is his place in the divine mind. He is inseparable from his own identity, his own clear, distinct, perfectly distinguished individuality. Each idea is spiritually significant, spiritually effective, spiritually articulate. Each is spiritually expressed.
Yes, and it says too that there's no suppressed, oppressed, repressed, or depressed. We stand in our places and accomplish what God would have us to do, not trying to be something we're not or wish we were something we're not, but then we will be fulfilled and happy. And in another article called Gideon's 300 by Louise Knight Wheatley, also a good article on this, the history of that, she says, the time once came when the children of Israel had urgent need to learn a lesson. Left without a leader after the passing away of Joshua, they so lapsed into evil ways that they found themselves fugitives in the land of Midian, hiding in dens and caves in the mountains, for fear of the depredations of those around them. This they endured for 7 miserable years, as so often as happens. In their dire extremity, they called upon the Lord, and he sent them a deliverer, which was Gideon, of course we know. And we know, too, his humility, right, about accepting it. Mm-hmm. And even after the job was done and they wanted to make him leader, he said, no, God is your leader. And they were tested. They had more people than their enemy with them, but they were also afraid and fearful and negative. They weren't worth much. So there was just chaos and fear. So they all had to be vetted in a way. And the first was those that were fearful had to go. And then the second were those who weren't alert. If you stooped over and put your face into the water to drink the water, you couldn't see the enemy's approach. But those who were looking and scooping up to their mouths, they could see the enemy. They were the alert ones. So it came down to only 300. But it doesn't take a lot of people, as we know on history's stories about history. It only takes a few dedicated ones. And I'm telling you, this story meant so much to us here in Plainfield during the law years, because we were down to a small amount. And we seemed to be facing a Goliath. But that didn't matter if we were fearless and alert and willing to do the work, which those that remained were. So it's a wonderful story. I love it. And I'm sure you all do too. So anyway, thank you, Jardel.
Thank you.
Now, there was an interesting little article here that Carrie sent about Queen Victoria, the religious side of Queen Victoria. And it says, this was from a 1901 article, "A prosperous reign," this is a quote, "is a sore trial to the integrity of people. We have not come out of it unscathed. We might have been destroyed by it, but we have had a monarch whose personal character has been a standing witness for virtue and godliness, and whose influence has always been exerted in favor of whatsoever things are true and honorable and pure and holy and of good report." And it brings out the Royal Exchange was originally opened in 1571 by Queen Elizabeth. It burned down twice and was rebuilt a third time, completed in 1844. But it mentions how the Queen had chosen a good husband in Prince Albert, and that he inscribed on the Royal Exchange in London, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof." Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful thing to do. So, and he loved to have men around him who liked to talk about God and the Bible and Christian life. So, and I do know, I guess it was our most recent Queen Elizabeth, her mother, which was called the Queen Mother. She was called the Queen Mother. She was married to the one who was in the King's Speech.
Yeah.
He was the one who had the very bad stutter.
Birdie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as we know, and people have verified for me from the last time we discussed this, the man that helped him was a Christian Scientist. Mm-hmm. And I do know from someone from Australia that calls me, who told me some time ago that they had seen when, I guess it was probably been Queen Elizabeth, who visited Australia, her entourage, or there were people that went to the Christian Science Reading Room and got literature. So that was observed. So anyway, whatever good has been accomplished, again, whatever good, it's been through God and Christianity. If it wasn't good, and there's been a lot of that too, it had nothing to do with God and Christianity, but whatever you could hold on to that, wherever that was, it caused things to prosper. Anytime we bring God into the equation, as Gideon certainly did. So, and also it's beautiful in the responsive reading. about, oh, come, let us sing unto the Lord. So this is from an article, Signs of the Times, 1925 issue, I guess, of the journal. This says, Jenny Lind, when asked the secret of her marvelous power as a singer, said, I sing to God. She forgot the people and looked into God's face and sang. Every singer should sing to God. Every Christian should certainly sing to God. That is what this psalm teaches. Oh, come, let us sing unto the Lord. Our lives should be full of worship. It is not enough to be joyous. We must put our joy into praise to God. Even if we are in sorrow, we should praise. In the ancient worship, incense was the emblem of prayer. Prayer is fragrance. An old rabbinical legend represents an angel standing at the gate of heaven to receive earth's prayer and praisings. As they arose, and as he caught them, they turned to roses in his hands. Earth's worship is fragrance in heaven. We should never cease to worship God. The Lord is a great God and a great King. Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Master, for he is our God. That was so beautiful. We must always sing to God, for God, to God. Then we'll never feel embarrassed by how we sing. We'll just be praising him. I know Imogen, who has such a beautiful voice, she's certainly adopted, singing unto the Lord. And then there's this beautiful poem also that Carrie sent called Songs. And it starts out, the spiritual power of scientific right thought without a direct effort, an audible or even a mental argument has oftentimes healed inveterate diseases. And that's Mrs. Eddy from Rudimental Divine Science. So the poem is this, Songs. Little silent songs we sing to thee, O God. They are joyous and sweet. They show the ever presence of thy love. Perhaps upon life's dusty highway, some weary and sin-burdened soul may hear them, and arrested, pause, wondering what this radiance is, whence this unsought, undreamt gladness comes, aware that heaven hath somehow touched the earth, and guided by the music of soul, may seek, and so find thee. The little songs smile, are glad, and we go on, singing, singing songs. Oh, come, let us sing unto the Lord. So remember to be always singing and knowing, taint so honey when we hear reports of awful negativity. And what's the background of that? It was Eustace's, someone worked in Eustace's home, right? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She became a practitioner. She would sit in a rocking chair and she would hear these terrible stories of people's problems, and she would just smile and say, "Taint so, honey. Taint so." So, and that's what we must do as well. All righty. Gone through so many things. Now this one I truly love, an article called "Every Knee Shall Bow." It's by Ella Hoag. Was a wonderful writer. And she says how about the importance of bowing to God. Mrs. Eddy says, in referring to her first visit to the Mother Church after the original edifice was built, this is from First Church of Christ Scientist Miscellany, that, quote, she knelt in thanks upon the steps of its altar. There the four splendor of the beginnings of truth fell mysteriously upon my spirit. Those of you who have seen the DVD of Mrs. Eddy, and her entering, and this was the original church. She did get on her knees. And to think, that's so beautiful. She spelt, "The beginnings of truth fell mysteriously upon my spirit." Mm. It was the most holy time. Mm-hmm. And we know, you know, in the communion service, we're bidden to kneel. It's a great expression of humility before God to kneel. Now, in this article, it also mentions, well, some of it's become a ritual and, you know, people don't think it's necessary to kneel or bow. And to the extent that it is a ritual, no, you shouldn't. But if your heart is in line with your knees, then it's something, an expression of something wonderful. And then one writer has well said, certain thoughts are prayers. There are moments when, whatever be the attitude of the body, the soul is on its knees. Christian Science teaches very clearly that it is the mental attitude which first and last is always of great importance. Human belief, however, is inherently proud. And as Christian Scientists, we need always to be on guard that this false element be continually brought into subjection. We need to watch our thoughts very carefully, that we may dwell constantly in the humility which consciously reflects the might of divine mind. And to do this, the bending of the knee and the bowing of the head may therefore still frequently be outward symbols of inward grace. I know I do this a lot. I truly do. I go way down on my knees often, because just in gratitude and in remembrance of what God has done. And it helps me. It symbolizes to me how great thou art and how small we are and how we must always keep that in mind. So with that beautiful article, guess what was the virtue medicine of the week? Humility. So we have a list, you know, all that wonderful list we have of all the potions of God's qualities are God's preparations of the sick are potions of his own qualities. So we've had gratitude, courage, forgiveness, awe, admiration and reverence, honesty, joy and laughter, generosity, charity, love, optimism, hope, healing of resentment, beauty, and humility. So now we have, yes, humility. And the article starts with, as a young man, Benjamin Franklin rejoiced in debating with others. Well honed in skill, he took great pride in his victories, even when he was technically wrong, for he was always rhetorically. Thank you. Rhetorically correct. As he matured, he realized those triumphs came at the cost of alienation and animosity. Reflecting on his prideful whims, Franklin wrote in his autobiography, "I determined, endeavoring to cure myself if I could of this vice or folly." His breakthrough came through the following simple maxim: imitate Jesus and Socrates. Franklin endeavored to embody the humility of Jesus and Socrates by softening his language with phrases like, "It appears to me." Franklin turned and included those who were enemies into friends. He changed his demeanor, created his diplomatic genius history, which history now celebrates. Yet humility's quiet strength extends beyond diplomacy. Emerging data shows that living with humility greatly benefits both oneself and others, and even leads to exceptional success. And it goes on about that, you know, people in business and other places, anywhere, your home, anywhere, if you are expressing humility, and maybe you're not a big know-it-all, you are much more successful when you are a big know-it-all, right? Who wants to work for a big know-it-all?
Nobody.
Nobody. So humility, I can have my own self do nothing. I don't know much about Socrates. I'm not sure about putting Jesus in the same category as Socrates. That sort of bothers me. Jesus is way above and beyond anybody, certainly any philosopher. But to imitate Jesus, we must, yes, the Christ, very much so. And Mrs. Eddy says, only follow me as I follow the Christ. So we will end now with something that goes along this line of thought.
This is an editorial entitled Heavenly Treasures by Ella W. Ho. She writes, Jesus made it very plain in his Sermon on the Mount that treasures in heaven are the only ones that can be relied upon. He states clearly that earthly treasures may be stolen or destroyed and are at best but transitory, while heavenly ones are safe from every form of depredation. And then he goes on to say, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Mrs. Eddy tells us in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, page 5, God pours the riches of his love into the understanding and affections, giving us strength according to our day. End quote. And what are the riches of his love? Listen to Mrs. Eddy's enumeration of some of them in Science and Health, page 248. Unselfishness, goodness, mercy, justice, health, holiness, love. And she goes on to say that if these reign within us, sin, disease, and death will diminish until they finally disappear. Here, then, is the way to seek heavenly treasures, and the way to find them manifested here and now. From this, it follows that we are not to look to matter for anything, not to seek matter, not to think about matter at all. Instead, we must desire only godlike qualities. We must cling to them, dwell with them. Let them reign in us and thus prove that they alone are real and desirable. In the degree that we do this, we are forsaking worldliness and laying up treasures in heaven.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.